I would love to take questions. I would love to take questions. If you've got specific questions, I'm a teacher. I love these things. I can go all night long. It's okay, really. Yes, sir. Oh, excellent. Yay. Oh, that's a good question. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right, right. Okay, the first thing that I would do with any piece of literature is to go back to the source. You need to go back to the one who wrote it. That's the first step, I would say. Go back to the author. Whenever you take, if you guys stick around with me through English 4, when we start to do the authors, the very first lecture I will give you is on that author himself or herself, so that you will know their background. You will know everything that led up to the point that they wrote the thing, because every author has a reason for writing. And you have to find out what it is. And it usually has to do with their worldview. It usually has to do with their philosophy, where it is they're coming from. Y'all heard of Ralph Waldo Emerson, right? Oh, yeah. I mean, when I was in public school, they taught that man like he was the best thing since sliced bread, right? The epitome of an American intellectual. And I went to public school and I bought it, right? I believed it until I was putting together my English 4 curriculum. And I wanted to study Ralph Waldo Emerson, and I reread Self-Reliance, which is his, you know, major, you know, magnum opus. And so I reread it, and there was a line in there where Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "There was a friend of mine who sought to refresh me on the dear old doctrines of the church. And he said to me, well, what if these thoughts that come to you are of the devil?" And this is what Ralph Waldo Emerson said. He said, "Well, I don't believe they are so, but I suppose if they are, that makes me the devil's child." Oh, okay. I just had an author admit, who says earlier in his little work, that every thought that we think is not only true for us, it's true for everybody, and it's genius. And now he says, these thoughts that come to me, it doesn't really matter if they're of the devil or not, and if they saw it, they are, I suppose, I'm the devil's child. And he laughs it off. And as Christians, we shouldn't laugh that one off. You see what I'm saying? So that made me look at Ralph Waldo Emerson a little bit closer. So I don't take anybody's word for it, you know, in terms of a classic. You know, I'll read the classic literatures, but I need to do it with a little bit of discernment. So now let's take your question. Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling, was a witch. And so I know that that's where she got her information from. And so herein lies this book designed for children that is meant to get them fascinated at a young age. And once they read two or three, they're going to read the whole thing, right? So I see something there in that author. Stephanie Meyer, this is what I heard. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I heard that she never wrote a novel before. She had never been published before, but she gets this dream about the Twilight series. It gets kind of downloaded to her, and she writes all the books within 6 months. And she gets them published. Or does that happen in the real world? You see what I'm saying? So things start to smell a little fishy to me with those two. Now, you take like C.S. Lewis and Tolkien. You have to go back to the authors themselves. Both of them strong Christians. In fact, Tolkien helped save C.S. Lewis. Now, I look at C.S. Let's take C.S. Lewis first. C.S. Lewis's Chronicles of Narnia, let's say. It's meant to be kind of an allegory. And I applaud him for getting the witch right. The witch was evil, and she had the evil part in the play. And Aslan the lion, you know, he's Jesus. He's the Christ figure, and he is perfect and unchanging. So he at least got the sides right, right? Those. And so in his story, you kind of see the allegory unfolding, used a lot of biblical allusion in there. Did have an element of fantasy, like the talking animals and things like that. But for the most part, the spirit of the story was right. Now, Tolkien, I enjoy his writing because he can turn a phrase, can't he? It's absolutely beautiful, beautiful writing. I understand what he was doing, in the story. He's trying to show how even the smallest person can overcome over great odds and fight evil and good and things like that. Personally, I don't think he could have foreseen what would be done with his work. Are you with me? Like with the books and the kids getting all off into this, to where they actually kind of make the Lord of the Rings their own idol. Like they've memorized all the weird lingo and language, and they know every single weird little creature and all the names of the swords and everything like that. I'm not quite sure he could have foreseen what was going to happen when he made the magicians the good guys. You see what I'm saying? Like Gandalf is supposed to be a good guy, and he's a wizard. So I don't think Tolkien really kind of foresaw what that could mushroom into. I believe that he, the man, had good intentions, but I almost feel like what's been done to it might not be in the spirit in which he wanted to have it written. You see what I'm saying? But what you got to know about your kids, you've got to be able to watch your kids and know when they start to show signs of getting too deep into something, Like if that's all they talk about, if their room is just plastered with pictures of one certain thing, that might be a good sign that they are just a little too obsessed on that one thing to the exclusion of just about everything else. But the books themselves, see, that's the thing. They're so well written. I've read the Harry Potter series. Very engaging. Tore through it, right? Very well written. But just because that author knows how to turn a phrase does not mean that that author has his heart turned toward God. So that's when the parents have to turn on their discernment a little bit. You might have to do a little bit of digging, right? Go to a source that you respect and find out what someone else might have said about it, or read the thing yourself. I read The Hunger Games, all three of them, and I didn't necessarily enjoy it either, but I did it because all the kids in my class were talking about it, right? Everybody was talking about how great it was, So I read it, and it was like taking 1984 and The Lord of the Flies and all these other books that I'd read that were really good and thrown in a blender and go, and that's pretty much what came out was The Hunger Games. But these kids never read those books, so they don't know. To them, it's like brand new, awesome. And to those of us that have read it, we just go, this is just rehashed stuff from like 50 years ago. It's really not the end. Her writing style drove me nuts. I was like, it's not even very well written, kiddos. You know? But, you know, so you got to kind of, as an English teacher, I look at it in a certain way, but then as a Christian and a mom, I have to look at it in another way. But I'd say first thing, go right back to the author. Dig around in that author's, you know, history and find out about that author first. Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Correct. Right. Right. Exactly. A spring cannot bring forth both good and brackish water. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Right. You do have the good and the bad, but they're both witches, right? They're both. Yeah. Right. Right. Correct. Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, that's exactly it. Mm-hmm. Yes. I teach at One Day Academy. Woo! I teach homeschool kids. They're marvelous. They're so good. Love you guys. Woo! My marvelous kiddos. They're so cool. Very, very good. Yes, ma'am. Yeah. Oh, okay. Ooh, that's a good story. I'll tell you what. It really started when somebody invited me to go to a psychic fair. You ever seen those in Austin where they rent like a huge hotel room, right? And then all the little psychic people set up their little tables around the outside and they're doing all their little, you know, like they'll cast your astrology chart and they'll read your cards and they'll read your eyes and they'll read your palm. And so you could go there and you pay like $5 to get in and you can just sample. It's like a little sampling of all the divination and everything in there. And I went in there and it started with just buying a deck of tarot cards. That was it. I bought a deck of tarot cards and I'm a student. I'm a reader, right? So I brought it home. I bought the book that went with it and I just memorized the thing. I went, I can do this. I can do this. And I was quite good at it too. Because really, anybody ever seen the show The Mentalist? It's a, yeah, there's two types of magicians in this respect. There are those that just do it for the money, right? The mentalist kind. Those are the kind that know how to read your body language. And they're watching for reactions out of you so that while they're reading your cards, if they feel like they're on the wrong track, they'll back up and they'll start over again. They're very good, very slick, right? Oh, and don't ever call one of those psychic lines. Those are a joke. They actually wanted me to do that, like as a job, right? Somebody had tried to court me to do this, and they told me what was involved and how when it sounds like you're going to hang up, I'm supposed to say, oh, no, I'm getting something else. Because I'm supposed to keep you on the line as long as possible because it's $3.99 a minute or something like that. You see what I'm saying? I mean, it is a money-making racket. No doubt about it, right? And then, okay, there are those that are doing it for the money. And then there are those who are actually, you know, deep into this. Those are the ones that are totally deceived, right? They actually believe that when they do this, that they are exercising this power. And like I said, it's in the demon's best interest to make that person believe that they are the one making all of these things happen. Because that's what keeps you going deeper and deeper and deeper into it. Right? So you've got to be able to kind of sense that. But mine started with tarot cards. I just got a deck of tarot cards and I memorized the thing and I started to read people. Right? That was it. And then from there, I drove by a shop on South First Street and I recognized the name of the store was the name of one of my tarot cards. And I went, oh, I must stop there. I mean, literally, it was just like that, just like that. One little thing led to another until, before you know it, I am working at that shop. I am learning everything that she's got in there, and I'm a quick student. I like sucked it all up, right? But I should have known something was up when I was at a class with this older witch who was trying to teach us stuff. And so she was trying to explain how we were supposed to behave. Because people say, do witches have one book that they go to, like we have the Bible? No, not really. They got several different books that they might glean from. Basically, you are God. You get to design how you believe, and whatever you believe is true for you. Have you heard that one? Whatever you believe is true for you. It's just true. And I'm like, okay, so how does that work? I believe there is a God and you believe there's no God and we're both right. Where does that work? You know, how does that work in real life? And so, that's the, it's seemingly innocuous, right? But Satan is very evil, but he's very patient. He'll plant a seed somewhere in your youth and just wait for the opportunity for it to germinate and take total advantage of it. And that's what it was for me. You know, it was just a fascination with the darkness, a fascination with trying to find information that I didn't think I could get otherwise. Oh, gosh, it's just the Eve thing, right? There was that apple. Well, she thought somewhere in there that God was holding out on her. Oh, isn't that sad? The first sin is mistrusting the heart of God, that he's holding out on us. That if I eat that apple, I'm going to get knowledge that I didn't have before because he's keeping it from me. How many of you watch the movies The Matrix? Anybody watch The Matrix? Oh, I'm going to burst your bubble on that one too. The Wachowski brothers, the ones who made those, are straight up Gnostics. The Gnostic gospel. Are you familiar with that? The Gnostics believe, well, basically take the gospel that we have and turn it on its ear. Right? And that's the Gnostic gospel. It believes that our world is the creation of a flawed and evil God, and it was Satan, the light bearer, who liberated us. You see, they flipped the entire thing. That is the Gnostic gospel. It's not truly revealed until like the second and the third. So the kids who already saw the first and the second, they're going to watch the third. And the Wachowski brothers totally admitted it, like in an interview. Yeah. And they laughed when people called it a Christian film. Because it's got the word Trinity in it. So it must be a Christian film. Right? You know, I'm like, no, go to the source. They're Gnostics, of course. Right? Oh, and the dude who wrote The Golden Compass. Anybody read that book or seen that movie? That one was a straight-up atheist, a God-hater, and his whole purpose in writing that series was to kill God in the minds of the children. He was very forthright about it. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Oh. Oh. Oh, okay. George Lucas is a Buddhist. And so, like I said, go to the source. And so he has a worldview that he is putting out there. This force doesn't have a name, it doesn't have a face, and it doesn't care about you. Are you with me? It's just the force. And it's like whichever side gets fed more is the side that wins, right? And so you've got to think, he's putting his worldview, his Buddhist worldview is all wrapped up in Star Wars from beginning to end. And so these kids that want to be Jedi Knights, there we go with the fantasy, that distraction thing again, like all they want to do is just be a Jedi. They're not real, but they want to be a Jedi, right? And so, yeah, that's my opinion. Is it entertaining? Well, yeah. I mean, it's made to be lights and buzzers and all that stuff. It's great. But you got to go back to the source. The guy's a Buddhist, and you know his worldview is embedded through the entire thing. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Christian magicians. Which one? Don't know him. Illusionists. What, do they levitate and stuff like that? Is that? don't know. Christian magicians. Like magic tricks. Is it like sleight of hand? Do they know it's like, is it like sleight of hand? Like, you know, just like, that kind of stuff? Well, it could, yeah, it could feed into their desire for the illusion and for that, you know, kind of thing. I don't know. It just seems like, why would a Christian want to spend all of his time doing that? You know what I'm saying? It just seems like, what's the point in that? This is, I mean, I'm preaching the gospel by doing sleight of hand. It just doesn't seem like it's very effective. Or does he preach the gospel in his, I mean, does he deliver it at the end? Okay, maybe that's trying to redeem the whole thing. I mean, so I suppose. I guess if he's using it, if he's got their attention and he delivers the gospel, you know, awesome. But I don't know. Yeah, I guess that's just his way. Mm-hmm. That was very interesting. This is how I know God wanted me out. Because usually if you try to leave those things, they will not let you leave. They will try everything to get you to stay. They will hound you. They will cast spells on you, that kind of thing. I mean, anything they can to get you to stay. This is how I know it had to be God, is that I was kicked out. Man, talk about it like a bummer. I was kicked out. I was kicked out. So this is how I know. And you know what was sad? I was kicked out. And my weak flesh wanted to get back in, right? But the door was closed so tight. I mean, when God closed that door, there was not even an inch to breathe. Couldn't even get in there. He closed it so soundly, right? That even though, had they opened it a crack, I'd have been right in there, right? Just slightest, boom, I would have broken the door down and gone right back in. That's how strong the pull was, right? But no, I was kicked out, door was slammed, and I couldn't go back. I mean, yeah. I mean, but normally, once you're in, they try to keep you in, right? But I think God just said, nope, you're done with her. You can't have her anymore. And, you know, I was gone. I was gone. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, here we go. What you're doing with the hypnotism thing, right? Basically, you are opening, you know what they say, empty your mind. Open your mind. Open it up. That's not a really good idea, right? That's not a good idea because you are basically saying, vacancy, come in here. And, you know, there have been people who get so wrapped up in this, sometimes it's hard for them to come back, right? The thing that takes over likes it in there. You see what I'm saying? And so anything that makes you forget what you're doing is not a good thing, right? It's just not a good thing. I'd stay away from the hypnotism big time. I saw a very disturbing movie It was based on real life events of a woman who was not a Christian, who was hypnotizing all of these people, and they started to have these delusions of being abducted by aliens, right? All of this activity, and the entire movie and film is based behind how they believe these people were abducted by aliens. But I'll tell you what, if you watch this film and you're really looking at it, I'm like, this is demonic. It's so straight up demonic. These people in their hypnotic trances, these are big, bulky lumberjack guys too, right? And in their hypnotic trance, they are so scared, they are leaping over the back of the couches, trying to scramble away from whatever it is they think they're seeing, right? What scares a man like that, right? What scares a big, bulky lumberjack guy is that we've got the demonic at play, and they invited them in. When you allow yourself to be hypnotized, you are inviting them in. You're saying, go ahead, right? Empty vessel, go ahead and use it. Not a good idea. I'd say, nope, don't do it. Not a good thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know it's awful, isn't it? It's really bad. Yeah. There's a couple of great books written by a lady named Gladys Hunt. Now, she didn't write the book. She wrote like a reference book. It's like a list of books that you can check out. It's called Honey for a Child's Heart, and then she wrote Honey for a Teen's Heart. So that's a good place to start. And so say if you went onto her website, she might be able to help you out with other titles. But to go to a source that you trust and get recommendations for books that do build up and edify, you know, Christian fiction, things like that. I mean, that's its own genre. Historical fiction. Boy, I'll tell you what, when I introduced to my English twos, remember the ones that were like this? You know, no fantasy. What do you mean? What do I write? What do I write about? If I don't write about fantasy, what do I write about? I said, let me introduce you to historical fiction, right? Where you go to an actual country on this actual planet in an actual space and time and research it thoroughly, right? And then choose a character or somebody who may have lived during that time and tell their story as it may have been lived. Whoa. That was a big shocker. But historical fiction's awesome. In fact, that's the really coolest way to learn history, is somebody who's written good historical fiction. Well, I mean, that's fabulous. I've learned a lot just from reading those. Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am. Which TV shows are you talking about? So you're saying that don't kids just know that it's all made up? Okay. Do they know that it's all made up? I would say some of them, yes. Some of them, yes, but they don't care. They're going to dive into it anyway because it is a thing that they can put their time and their energy into where they feel like they can connect or belong or be a part of it or something like that. So some of them, yes, and then they just kind of discard it and move on. Some of them, yes, but it doesn't really matter. And then some of them, no. Some of them know. I mean, and you got to think of it. They might say that they don't, but look at what they're wearing. Look at the t-shirts that they have on. Look at what they text on. Look at what they do their Facebook on. What are they talking about, right? What's occupying their mind? Because whether it's true or not doesn't make it any less of a distraction, does it? No, it really doesn't. So you just need to look and see. They might say, oh, no, it doesn't mean anything to me, but that's all they talk about. That's all they do. That's all that's on their board or anything. So you can talk to me all day long, but your fruit is just screaming at me, you know, something different. So, yeah, you can kind of take it at face value, but dig a little bit down there. Yes, sir. Okay. Okay. Is that the dragon thing? Is that the dragon thing? Well, you know, I don't have a very high opinion of dragons. I mean, I've read Revelation. It's not, dragons. Satan is a dragon. It's not really good. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I think of it like that. If it's connected to something that the Lord has clearly delineated as evil, then it doesn't matter how you try to dress it up. You know, you can put a dress on a pig, it's still going to be a pig. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't matter how slickly it's written, I do indeed have to look at it for what it really is. And yeah, I might just have to say no, you know, in lieu of something else. Mm-hmm. Could I classify it? Now, if you want to know, is it evil? Is that what you're saying? All the sci-fi stuff, like time travel and all that stuff? Oh, right. Okay, all that stuff. Not necessarily evil, depending on what they do with it. I mean, you do have to almost, like with Star Trek, you almost have to take it on a case-by-case basis, right? And look at the episode and who wrote it and all that other stuff. So you might have to take it on a case-by-case basis based on who wrote the thing and what their agenda is. Because a lot of the stuff that's out there in the media today is from a liberal humanist standpoint. They do have an agenda. They seek to kill God in the minds of the kids. That's straight up. And so anything that comes out of Hollywood, I'm immediately on guard. Immediately. And so I'm looking to see, and even the Disney stuff. Oh, it is so sad. I can't even watch a Disney film like Nemo. I loved Nemo, right? But they were, when they were going through the jellyfish forest, Dory says, "You can't fight evolution. I was built for speed." And I was like, oh man, see how slick that was? It was just a little drop. And then like Ice Age, you know? Like Ice Age. They're in the ice tunnels, right? And then there's, you know, it looks like Sid's eyes on this little blob. And then it's Sid's eyes on a fish. And then it's Sid's eyes on something with legs. And then it's Sid's eyes on something with, you know, and then there's Sid at the end. And it pauses on it for a good couple of seconds, just long enough for the kids to go, oh, look, there's evolution. You see what I'm saying? I mean, they have an agenda and they start small. They start little. And so I started to get to the point where I couldn't even watch these things anymore. It started to make me mad, you know, and then I'd pause it. Do you see that, kiddos? I mean, I got my little guys there. Do you see that? And I had to explain it to them because it just kind of crept out of nowhere, you know, blindsides you. So you do have to be aware that even the stuff that's supposed to be good for our children, don't just plop them in front of the TV and leave them there. You know, you might want to watch that one. You might want to have a little bit on discernment on that one. Mm-hmm. Okay, I can do this one. I can do this one. Halloween, we don't call it Halloween. We called it Samhain. And Samhain was a major high holiday, right? I mean, we had the biggest party festival. I mean, the whole thing. Samhain was the big one. And it's because in the Wicca tradition, that is the one day out of the year that the veil between the living and the dead is the thinnest. So that's the night that all the seances are going on. That's the night that all the circles are being cast. That's the night that the spells are going on. If you Christians really want to make an impact on Halloween, you wouldn't have a fall festival. You'd have a prayer circle in here to try to combat what is going on out there. Because I know for certain what they're doing out there. And none of it's good. None of it's good on Halloween, right? None of it's good. So yeah, I would say no, Halloween, don't even mimic the darkness. Don't even, you know, play into that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. What age did I... Oh no. I was out of college. So I must have been like 27, 26, 27. So I was a young adult by the time I really got into it, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh man. You know what? I'm going to honor my mother tonight, and I've got to tell this story of what she did for me. I dishonored my mother and father. You know, when it says to honor your mother and father because you will live long on the earth, I'm surprised I'm still here. You know, I really am, because I dishonored them in so many ways. The deeper I got into the occult, the more time I spent apart from them, to where I would only see them on Thanksgiving and Christmas. And then when it got down to the end of it, I wouldn't see them at all. I mean, I wouldn't go home for Christmas or Thanksgiving. So I was more and more separated from them until I just didn't see them at all. We were pretty much separated for the better part of 5-6 years. I mean, just had nothing really to do with each other. But my mother found out that shop that I was working at. I guess she found out through the grapevine that I was working there. And she made a point to come to the shop on her lunch hour. Now, she wore her cross, right? She didn't change who she was, but if you meet my mother, she's quite a character. But she wore her cross, and she would walk right into the shop. And the first time she did it really shocked me. I was like, I was a little leery of it, but she's got such a personality, right? That all the crazy weirdo people in the shop just loved her. You know, here's this woman, this Christian woman. I mean, you know, she's got these people have dreadlocks and piercings and tattoos, and they're pretty scary looking people. And my mother would just go in there and just start to, you know, talk to them. And so she did this for the better part of 2-3 months, right? And then when the bottom fell out, right, when they ostracized me, when they kicked me out, and I had no place to go, and more so than that, they were coming after me to hurt me, right? And I had no place to go, because my mother went to that shop for those 2-3 months to make sure I knew that she was still available for me if I needed her. She was the first person I called, and I didn't even get the full sentence out. Mom, I'm in trouble. I'll be right there. Click. Shoom. There with her little Volvo, popped the trunk, threw all my stuff in and drove me away and hid me at her house. And when those witchy people tried to get a hold of me, calling and everything like that, she took the phone. She's not talking to you. Click. I mean, you want to talk about the walls. The mama bear came out and her, oh no, you're not having her now. Right? That was it. She could not come at me by force. She couldn't drag me out of the shop. Right? But she told me afterwards, after it was all said and done, she said, I knew that one day the bottom was going to fall out of that, Deborah. It was just a matter of time, right? I knew that it was going to fall out. And when it did, I needed you to know that I was still there and that I still loved you. And I wanted to be the first person you called, and you did. And the rest was history. So, yeah. Yay for Mom. Woo! Right? Yeah. She said she prayed and she prayed and she prayed and she prayed, and she just knew that the day was going to come. She just had to stay the course. And she said, those were the scariest people I ever met in my life. I can't believe you made me go through all that. That was just awful. You know, that guy had piercings in places I didn't, ugh! You know, it's like, she's like, oh, she's like, I have no idea how hard that was for me. So that's the love of a mom right there, you know. Mom's love. Yes, sir. Never seen it. Don't know. I'm sorry. I'm in the classroom all the time. I never get out. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I don't think I can do on that one. Yes.
The one thing is,
It's all right. Downloading, accessing, processing. I do it all the time.
And evaluate it in light of the scripture. And so if we watch Frozen or whatever, so look what they did. Is this biblical? So appreciate some element of fantasy because it is going to be in their world, part of the world to some degree. And say, but you know what? That's not right. And not to say we're not going to watch The Little Mermaid is evil. Our attitude toward it, like reading The Raven, I know that there's Worldview Academy that Chris Kirk put me on years ago. One of the things was evaluating Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven and his view of death. Those are some things. What message is it? So not to avoid it totally. And I'm not saying that to give excuse to people who want permissiveness to delve in it totally. But to find that balance of what does God say? I want to use this to teach my children about the worldview, to look at the worldview of a piece of literature or a movie and present that to my children so that they're not deceived and to be on the alert.
Right.
And not
you need to investigate. You need to go to the source. Yeah.
And what is God telling you? What is he revealing to you about it? And specifically, like you talked about the room that was all plastered. If your child, like I had a child, I had two boys. One could watch all the video games, and that's all he could think of all the time. And that was 20 years ago. Genesis was out. Thank you, Genesis. But then the other kid could do it. I dated myself. The other kid could do it, you know, once a week and be fine. But the other kid was consumed.
Right.
And so you have to kind of look at your children, all they think of is live and breathe being a Star Wars character. It's consuming them, it's becoming an idol. And where it may be for one kid, it may not be for another. You know what I mean?
You got to know your kids. Well, and also when it comes to like, I mean, I in my head, I kind of see this classical approach to education that the younger ones are still at that age where some of them have a hard time distinguishing fantasy from reality. So if you start thrusting these things on the little ones, right, that might be doing them a disservice. I mean, the older you get, like we know, like say, when we were discussing going to the author, in English 4, we study The Raven. We study Edgar Allan Poe because he is a transcendentalist. He is a transcendental pessimist. He believes like Christians do, right? Man is basically evil. And if you leave man to his own devices, he is going to get worse. And Edgar Allan Poe clearly loved the darkness, right? But a Christian sees that and reaches out to the Savior, right? A transcendental pessimist goes, no, that's fine. I like swimming around the darkness. I'm good down here. You know, that's Poe. And so to be able to read The Raven and just like you said, look at his view of death and why he views it that way. An older kid can do that. An older kid has the capacity to do that. But if you try to force this abstract thought on the little guys, and they just need concrete things, you know, you got to stay concrete for the little guys to entrench them in what is real so that the count. Oh, this is beautiful. Do you know the way that they train bank tellers to notice a counterfeit? They spend all of their time not looking at counterfeits. They spend all of their time looking at the real thing, studying the real thing, everything about the real thing, every little nook and cranny and everything. So that when a counterfeit comes in, it just pops. So you do well while your kids are little to have them looking at the real thing a lot. So that when you do let them see things like this, they immediately sense the counterfeit. Right? But if they don't know what the real thing is, they're going to get taken in by the counterfeit. And so that's why I said, when it comes to the little guys, no, I would not compromise just because of the way they're wired. You know, they need concrete, they need the truth, and they need us to guide them. And so here, entrench them in the truth. And then as they get older, you can show them the counterfeits and show them why it's the counterfeit and they'll get it. You know, so I guess that's where I'm kind of heading. Yes. Okay. I celebrate Christmas. Oh, when I was a witch? I didn't do very much at Easter, but everybody loves Christmas because you get presents and, you know, if you just do the worldly thing, you know. I did for a few years. I got saved when I had two boys. Well, I had my three boys and my little girl was on the way when I got saved. So they were all under the age of five. Isn't that right, hon? They were all under the age of five. They were all little bitty. So they really don't remember the time when mommy was a witch. Not really. They were all there for my baptism, though. That was pretty cool, you know. My kids actually got to see me get dunked. That was pretty neat, you know. So, that was awesome. Yes, ma'am. Tell you what, first time I was a new Christian when I first met somebody who, you know how you know they are one, but they just won't admit it to anybody, you know? Like she had this little tattoo on her back. And, you know, I think I was still so ashamed at having been deceived by it that I was mean. You know what I'm saying? I was not full of grace and love because I was still dealing with my own shame at having been deceived. And so I made her feel bad. And I made her, she left, you know, really fast. She just took off. And I've never forgotten that because I feel like I missed an opportunity because I still felt shame. You know, I still really felt, you know, and so I wanted to laud it over her that I knew something that she didn't know, and that was my bad. And so that being said, years later, right, so a good eight or so years later, y'all heard of that big fire in Bastrop? No, big fire in Bastrop? Well, it ate my house. I mean, completely destroyed the house. And so, you know, within a day, we are homeless. And we didn't even have time to really process the fact that we have no place to live before God had given us a place to live. Like a friend of ours had just bought this house and they were planning on renting it. And so they just like opened up the door to us. And it just so happened that next door to us was a pagan family, you know, and it was a dad and a mom and a little girl and a grandma all living in the same house. And I met the grandma, very nice lady, right? But the daughter had a little pentagram, like about, you know what I mean by pentagram? It's a five-pointed star inside a little circle. And she had a little pentagram, teeny tiny, right, that she would wear. And the grandma and I talked, and the grandma knew that I was a Christian. So the grandma goes back and tells the daughter that I'm a Christian. And this is what she says. Oh, no, really? I liked her. Every Christian I've ever met has always told me I'm going to hell. You know? And so I met her in the backyard and she said, I heard you're a Christian. I said, yeah. I said, and I know what that is too. You know, cause I said, I used to be one. I said, I was into all that. In fact, she even knew the shop I used to work at. I said, you know, I probably served you something, didn't even know it, you know, years ago. And she's like, so are you and I going to be okay? And I said, you know what? Let me tell you what I've learned about my Jesus in the last 10 years that I've been walking with him. When Jesus wants to get a hold of you, he will. And it doesn't have to be through me. And it's okay. I mean, you and I, you just have to know that if you and I are sitting down having coffee, I'm going to talk about Christ. So don't get offended. And she said, all right, as long as you know that I'm going to talk about la la la, don't get offended. I was like, I'm good with that. I already know all your stuff. So, you know, you and I are good. And so she and I, this is the first time I had a working relationship with a pagan. And to this day, I mean, she's still... she's still a pagan, as far as I know, but she's still my friend, right? She's still my friend. And she knows through a series of events, she knows that, well, gosh, I'd have to tell the whole story to make that work. When I just started to come to Jesus, I mistrusted everybody still, right? And it wasn't until my pastor, beautiful man, We had no vehicle. Our vehicle had died, and we had no way of getting around. This pastor, remember the guy that I was mad dogging, you know, for four weeks. when I did come to Christ, and of course I had to tell him and his sweet blue-haired wife, oh yes, I was a witch until last week. Would you please baptize me? That was interesting. That was a nice conversation. but a month or so later, he drives up to our house with a Suburban, right? A big Suburban. I'm big enough to fit all my kids in. And he comes up to my husband and just hands him the keys and says, this is for you. Right? This is a gift. God wants you to have it, no strings attached. He wants you to know he's taking care of your needs. And he just gave us this car. Now, you know, the world that I come from, well, you need payments and you need interest and you need all this. But you just give somebody a car, you know? Now, that was something that I could not deny. There was no explanation for that. How do you explain somebody who just gives you a car when you really, really need it? And that was something that truly, I mean, made me think there's something different about these people. You know, people in the real world don't just buy people cars, right? Well, flash to the fire, right? When the fire happened, I mean, the floodgates of generosity from God's people just came at us like a deluge. I mean, we were just inundated with gifts. I mean, we had more after the fire than we ever had before. You know, go figure that, right? We had exceedingly more than we even knew what to do with. And my friend next door, right? My friend that I've established this relationship with, she hits a deer on the way to work and destroys her car, right? So she now has no car to get back and forth to work in, right? They have one vehicle they're trying to share between three people. And this is how I know it was God, because my husband comes up to me and says, we should buy her a car. We've got it. I mean, we've got the money. I mean, we can get a good, solid, nice, used car. We can get it for her. We've got the money. This is how I knew it was God. Because how many of your husbands just say, let's just buy somebody a car? This has got to be God, right? So we called my friend, who's a techno guy. He's got the spiritual gift of internet. He can find anything online just like that. I mean, I am not one of those people, right? He's got the spiritual gift of internet. And he wasn't on the internet more than 10 minutes, and he found a good used car, you know, in the next town that we could go plunk down money and buy and then drive home that evening. And so one of the best nights of my life was going over next door at about 9 o'clock at night to my friend's house and knocking on the door and saying, hey, I need you to come outside. I need you to come outside. So she came outside and we're just sitting in the driveway. She said, what are we out here for? I was like, I'm bringing something. There's something coming for you. She said, oh, okay. So we just sat there in the driveway, you know. They phoned and said they were on their way. And so here comes this car. It was really a nice car. Turns into the driveway like this. And she's like, well, is it in the trunk? No, it ain't in the trunk. And then my husband gets out of the car and hands her the keys. And she's like, well, what do you mean? He says, it's yours. God wants you to know he's taking care of your needs without any strings attached. He loves you. Oh, my goodness. This woman just broke down. She cries out. Her mother comes out. They're all weeping and bawling in the driveway over this car. Immediately, out comes the phone, calling everybody. I just got a car. Somebody gave me a car. Can you believe this? I mean, this is, you know, that she cannot deny. She might be a pagan until the day she dies, but I'll bet you 2-1, when she goes to those pagan festivals and those people start dogging on Christians, she has to say, oh, but I've met one. I've met one. And so, you know, that's probably the best story that I have about that. And I it's one of those things that's just kind of treasure in your heart, you know. I was like, thanks, Lord. That was really cool. Yes, ma'am. I know it's a movie. And I haven't gotten around to reading the book yet because it's not summertime, but that's one of those things that my students are reading that I wanted to read before I watch the movie. I always read the book before I watch the movie, right? Because you want to know what Hollywood does to it, right? And if she is a Christian, I would take that into consideration as I read it. You know, it's the same thing, just like what she was saying. You want to research the author? Find out about the author, and that way you can read the book in the light of the worldview and see if it matches up, right? And what is she trying to show you and teach you? What's the message and the themes and things like that? So it comes out when you go to the author. I guess I'll have to do that this summer, put it on my reading list so I can, I've got 6 more weeks. Yes. Well, if that is true, well, I always look at it this way. Once you know it, right, if you investigate it and it's true and you've been made aware of it, I look at it this way. God has now revealed that truth to you, so now you're responsible for working within that truth. Max Lucado had a great story of him driving to work, and he noticed that there was this little back alley, this little shortcut, you know. He was like, ooh, I found this little back alley shortcut. And he'd take that little back alley shortcut every day and shave 10 minutes off of his time. And he loved that little, he was like delighted with it. He felt like he found something that nobody else had found before. Until he's in the car driving with his wife one day, and he says, hey, watch this. And he takes the little shortcut in the back. And his wife says, Max, didn't you see that sign? He's like, no, what sign? He goes, that sign says it's one way going this way. No, you're going this way. You can't be back here. And he says from that point on, he couldn't enjoy the shortcut anymore because now he knew I'm breaking the law. It's not good. So it's almost like you can plead ignorance up until the point that God reveals it to you. But once he reveals it to you, then you're responsible for, you know, accepting that truth and working with it. If you deny it, well, that's its own thing. So if it is indeed true, right? If it is true, then you're responsible for working within that truth from here on in, because I got to believe that God revealed it to you for a purpose at that time. That's the way I would look at it. I'm responsible for it now, just like Max was responsible for not going through the alley anymore because he knows it was illegal, right? That's kind of the way I look at it. I'd have to dig around and you know, kind of work that out. Oh, I'm so sorry. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Oh, gotcha. And then that made it that one sign. Okay, excellent. Well, if that be the case, you know, like I said, go to the source with it, and then, you know, you got to investigate. Oh, snoops it or something like that. Just to verify the validity of it. I mean, in this society, everything seems so relative, doesn't it? I mean, everybody just kind of makes up their own truth. But to go back to the source and see exactly where it comes from, so then we're responsible for it. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. If the only thing that you've got in common with these people is the fantasy literature, then you almost have to evaluate the depth of the friendship and whether this is something you really want to put your time and effort and energy into, whereas it might be better to have one or two really good friends rather than 12 really empty friends, you know what I'm saying, who only want to talk about superficial things. Now, I'm not sure if they even allow this in public high school anymore, but do they have Christian clubs? Are they allowed to, like, you know, have, okay, like FCA and things like that? I didn't know if they even allowed that on campus anymore. It wasn't really sure. But you might have to seek out those friendships, you know, and I think the Lord would honor that. A spirit of no compromise, right? As long as the Lord, I mean, if you show that you are actually committed to it, that you're not going to cave when a couple of people make fun of you, and believe me, they will, right? Oh, yeah. I mean, surely they're going to have a couple of people want to make fun of you to make you just go right back in there, because that's what the demons do. That's their job. And so if you recognize that the demons are only allowed to do whatever God allows them to do. Now, that's kind of the bad news, because sometimes God does allow them to do things to us. He is sovereign. I mean, he didn't wake up and go, oh my goodness, fire's in Bastrop. I mean, he knows what's going on, right? He's fully aware of what's going on. So don't focus on the demons necessarily. Focus on the fact that if God allows a trial to come to you, it is for a very good reason. It is for your good. And it is up to us to go to him constantly and say, you need to show me the good in this. Are you trying to tell me that you are all I need? That I don't need this false comfort of these empty friends? Are you trying to tell me that you are all I need? That even if everybody abandons me, that you are enough for me? Is that what you're trying to tell me? You see what I'm saying? And so you might need to go on your knees before him and find out exactly what he wants you to do. Because it sounds like he is calling you to do something, or it wouldn't have bothered you enough to say something. And so it's time to go on your face. It's time to go on your face and just say, Lord, what is it you would have me do? Because it might be somebody just needs to see somebody take a stand, right? If somebody takes a stand, somebody's going to recognize, wow, maybe I am empty. and then they reach out for something more. You see? So I just say, yeah, I'd go on your face before your Lord about this one and see what he would have you do. Right? Yes, precious girl. Yes. Yes. You know, I don't want to say that they don't have gods and goddesses, because they do, several of them, right? They got a god and a goddess for everything. But the thing is that they don't really, they worship them in kind of a false way. Are you with me here? Like, they'll do it so that they can get dressed up and play in a little circle and parade around, but do they really give homage? Do they really, you see what I'm saying? Do they really empty themselves in front of this god? No, not really. The gods are more of a means to an end, right? So when I say that you are your own god, it's because you get to pick and choose whatever god you want to worship. You get to, you see what I'm saying? And so did I personally ever get into the Satanism thing? No. But I can tell you that a Satanist is easier to turn to a Christian than an atheist. Because at least the Satanist knows the players in the game, right? He just chose the wrong side. But a Satanist is actually easier to change than an atheist, because an atheist, you got to convince them that the game exists and here are the players. Right? So a Satanist must be much easier to turn. Oh.
I know, Deborah, keep talking, and I know you'll answer the questions,
yeah.
For sure, right?
Oh, yes.
But I know our childcare workers are leaving.
Yeah, I got to go grab the kids.
Pray, and if you want to ask Deborah, I'm sure you'll be around over here. Mm-hmm. Grab her. I'm sure she'd love to answer more questions like that. Do you mind praying for us to close?
Oh, I love it. Gracious Father. Your hand is stretched over this generation. It is mighty and it is strong. And what you have shown us is that this generation has the greatest potential to make the greatest impact for your kingdom. I pray that they are able to throw off all the sin that so easily entangles, and that they will run this race set out before them, using you as their end point, their finishing point, that they will race after you their whole lives, not look to the right or to the left, but keep their eyes trained and focused on you. To your glory, Lord Jesus, forever and ever. Amen.